When you need guidance from someone you can truly trust, someone who aligns with your values of sovereignty and natural living, look no further than Dr. Jennifer Tice. Dr. Jen's expertise in homeopathy and naturopathic family care is unmatched. She is my personal go-to when I need an opinion on how to best support my family and myself when we are healing. And something I'm always telling everyone about, Dr. Jen runs a very specific food intolerance test. Having this information has quite literally changed my life once I decided to take it seriously. Knowing what our specific foods were to avoid has radically improved the health of myself and my children. So if you're looking to uplevel your health, head over to drjennifertice.com and you can find her on Instagram at Dr. Jennifer Tice.
Into the wild I'm going, into the wild I am. It's been a while, freedom child, since I left my roots back home. Into the wild I'm going, into the wild I am. It's been a while, freedom child, since I left my roots back home.
Welcome to the Free Birth Society podcast. This is a radical space for women who are ready to celebrate their autonomous choices in birth, motherhood, and beyond. Together, we'll learn about wild birth through personal narrative, we'll explore the politics of birth, and we'll analyze everything that relates to our lives as women from a feminist perspective. Here's your host, Emily Saldaya.
It's been a while, freedom child.
Women, it is 2025, which means it is time for you to take your place in the sovereign birth movement. I am thrilled to announce that our absolutely groundbreaking, life-changing, consciousness-shifting, super popular program, the Radical Birthkeeper School, is now open for enrollment. This is your chance. We run the Radical Birthkeeper School once a year, so now's the time to jump in. You love this podcast. You're obsessed with birth. You want a better world for women and families. So here it is. I am inviting you to join the 850 women from over 30 countries who have taken this program and now are confidently bringing this work forward, protecting the sacredness of birth, being an option so desperately needed for mothers and babies. From women brand new to birth, to curious mothers pregnant with their first child, to disillusioned midwives and doulas, even OBGYNs and nurses, women are flocking to this new paradigm of birth consciousness, and the Radical Birthkeeper School is the gateway. The RBK School is the place to gain the language and the knowledge to communicate and step into the sovereign birth paradigm with confidence. If you feel the call, answer it by taking your place in the RBK School. Head over to www.radicalbirthkeeperschool.com today to preview the full curriculum, hear from our many graduates, and learn more. Mentorship, sisterhood, lifetime access, the knowledge, wisdom, and guidance you need to take your place in the sovereign birth revolution, all totally unlocked. Be the change. Join us. radicalbirthkeeperschool.com.
Hi, Kate.
Hey, Emily.
My friend.
So happy to be here. Thanks for having
me. Yeah. I'm glad to have you here. Glad to have you on this season of sharing these stories. And you've had just this like beautiful arc since I've known you, you know, from obviously becoming a mother into becoming this real pillar in your woman's community. And you know, I am peripherally aware of the space you're now holding as a mother, as a wisdom keeper, as a birth attendant, and as a woman's organizer, you know, hosting these village prenatals as you have for so long in the community that has really seems from the outside grown quite strong. And I really think a lot of it comes down to you. So I'm just really excited to hear, however the story is going to come out today, your arc of this real growth and maturation over the years that I have really loved witnessing.
Thanks. Yeah, it's been such an exciting journey, and I'm so honored to tell this story. Happy to be here.
Where do you want to start? Who the heck are you when you get pregnant your first time?
Who am I? Well, I think I'll start before getting pregnant my first time, because there were some initiations that took place to prepare me for how I showed up when I became pregnant. Oh, becoming pregnant for the first time, right, which wasn't the birth of my daughter. I'll start with my childhood. I always knew that I wanted to be a mother. It was just something that was crystal clear to me in my destiny. I never doubted or wavered it. And I had quite a tumultuous relationship with my mother. I still do. And so I distinctly remember being a child, being a teenager, and feeling grief and yearning for a mother-daughter relationship that I didn't have and that I wanted. And I had such clarity from a young age, and this came in as really like a coping mechanism for some of the sadness that I had, which was that I knew I would be able to experience the mother-daughter bond that I always wanted, even if that meant that I was creating it from the maternal role. And so I would, you know, when I was in despair in relationship with my mother, I would cope by imagining myself as a mother with my children. And it would just be so warm and sunny and like in fields of flowers with my babies and just
floor to ceiling windows.
I would just envision, this future life and this connection. And what I have come to think about that now in retrospect, and all of the perspectives that I have with my spirituality and, you know, more clairvoyant identities that I associate with, I realized that I was in relationship with my spirit babies and my children as a child, and that they have always been so present for me throughout my life as guides and play a huge part in my story of keeping me on track and guiding me to bringing them through in a good way, how Margot wanted to be born. And I know I'll have more children. So, leading up to my first pregnancy and deep in my maidenhood, I was living in San Francisco. I had just graduated from the University of San Francisco in the winter of 2019. I was working like five jobs. I graduated a semester early. So I figured like, I'm just going to grind as hard as I can. I'm going to save up a bunch of money and then I'm going to travel. 2020, the world got all weird and afraid. And there was just absolutely no way that I was going to go along with a shelter in place order in San Francisco and be on lockdown and whatnot. So one of my dearest friends at the time and I decided to sell all of our belongings and yard sales on the street wearing our roller skates in very San Francisco.
Cute.
Put together all of our money and buy a van. And we were like, we're going to move into this van together and we're going to drive cross country and bounce between national parks and farms. And that's what we did. And that was how we started off 2020. And it was such a magical time in my life because I was really opening to what is my calling? What is my purposeful work? You know, I had just gone through a university education and wasn't seeing clear paths. I wasn't really lit up I wanted more, I want to be on purpose and in alignment with my soul and what I was really here to do. So I was just so guided by that time. It really feels like it was by the spirit baby that was, you know, going to come through soon thereafter. And I had so many mantras close to my heart at this time about surrendering. I wrote down all my fears. I burned them. I was just like, I want to remove distractions. I'm opening my heart more than it's ever been open. I just want to be guided as I travel across the country and meet all these people and have new experiences. And I want to be able to listen and hear clearly what's my calling. So it was very intentional to connect with what, you know, ends up becoming this path of authentic midwifery and motherhood. So living in the van, I've been on a farm on the East Coast for a while. My friend ends up peeling off and it's time for me to drive back out west to California. And when I was on the East Coast this summer of 2020 was the first time that I learned about Free Birth or the Free Birth Society. And it was through a friend sharing something on Instagram, and I thought that was super cool. So I, you know, like a lot of women, became totally obsessed, and it's just me in my van in the open road
it's
for
perfect.
Hours on end to just
That's
binge
perfect.
The whole podcast. Yeah, FBS and Medicine Stories with Amber was like, that was all I was listening to, and just really leveling up as a young maiden by hearing all of these wisdom stories. And it's part of why I'm so grateful to be here today, because I know the power of medicine stories, of sharing, and how much it's guided me, how much I've learned. So thank you to all the women who have shared their stories on this podcast before too. So driving back cross country, and I sometimes,
and you don't have a partner yet.
I did. I was partnered with Sebastian, but we were on uncertain terms of our relationship here.
Okay.
And it was still a pretty new relationship. Let's see. I met him in February of 2020. Yeah. We've just been
okay.
Together.
So it's freshy.
Yep. And, yeah. And he's 10 years older than I am. So I was like doing my maiden thing. So anyhow, driving cross country, I had been at a lot of like national forests and campgrounds. I hadn't been like a real home for a while, but I had some childhood friends that lived in Austin, Texas, and I was really excited to visit them and, you know, have a break, you know, sleep indoors for the first time in a while, and use a toilet in someone's house. And I pull up in front of my childhood best friend Mika's house, and I kind of like parked shitty because I'd been driving forever, and I'm like, whatever, I want to just go hug her. And then she's like, yeah, you should probably move your car. So I go back and I try to start it, and it's like has broken down. It won't start.
Oh, no.
And I was so glad I made it to her house.
Yeah.
But I was planning just to be there for a flash and like keep going. I had a travel agenda I wanted to stick to, but it was like this universal sign for me from the universe that I had to stop and slow down and look inwards. And I'll also say that I've always been very connected with numerology and like angel numbers, but once I learned about free birth and it just like opened my consciousness with such fascination, you know, at first it was like, you can do that. Like that's allowed. That's crazy. You know? And then I was obsessed. I was just inundated with this intensity like I have never experienced, with ones and twos every time I looked at the clock, the odometer, any receipt I had, any sign. And so as I'm like driving through Texas, I'm thinking the universe is trying to tell me something. There's something going on. I don't know what it is, but I'm listening, and just so many signs. And also it was 2020, it was October, and I turned 22 that month. It was also a month where there was two full moons in that October, which doesn't happen that much, that frequently. And I was also born on a full moon. My grandmother had my mother at 22. I'm very close with her. And I was also raised in part by a nanny from the day I was born, Silvana. And she started working with us when she was 22. So like this number of 22 and the full moons and all of this was really feeling potent for me. So van breaks down, and because I was stuck at my friend's house for a few days to figure out the repair, it was like, oh, I should probably have had my period by now. I just was so in a mobility lifestyle that I wasn't thinking about my cycle. I wasn't like, it wasn't even on my radar. And I had connected with Sebastian on the East Coast, but anyway, he wasn't with me. Like I wasn't thinking about partnership at that time in my life. And so I find out that I'm pregnant, and
oh my God,
it was the most thoughtless pregnancy. I mean, I've only taken two pregnancies, so like it was the most thoughtless experience. And so I just want to say for anyone listening, especially if you're a maiden and there comes a time that you decide to take a pregnancy test, just like my prayer is that women would pause and give themselves like even just 30 seconds of presence, grounding into your body, just resource yourself anyhow. Don't dissociate, turn your brain off, pee on it, and like flinch to see what happens. Because when I, you know, received this huge information from a stick that obviously my body already had, it was really intense and really overwhelming for me. And yeah. So
I mean, just in general, like realizing, I know that obviously this is the most common way to discover you're pregnant, but still it trips me out. I think about it all the time. Like discovering you're pregnant when you didn't ask to be on a conscious level, maybe on an unconscious level, whatever, whatever. We obviously know how babies are made. I mean, it's not like that mysterious how we get pregnant, right? But still, d realizing you are pregnant when you didn't intentionally and with full consciousness call it in is fucking hardcore. Like, that is a hardcore spiritual slap. Even if it turns into good news, even if it does, it just, I haven't had that experience. That's not how my two pregnancies have occurred, but I know that that is how most pregnancies occur. And it blows my mind to imagine that.
Well, you're just like, I'm not alone in here. There's been somebody else
What?
in
Yeah,
here this whole
it's
time. Yeah. So it was a big slap in the face for me and
Totally.
huge initiation. I immediately called Sebastian and he got on a flight to Austin to be there with me. He was
Oh,
super
good.
supportive. Yeah, he's amazing. And it was very unexpected, and the way that he wanted to approach processing the shock of the information was very male brain, logistical, like da 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 da. And I was just absorbing the feeling and just
Sure.
needed slowness and gentleness and presence and just to integrate this reality. And we were not aligning. We were butting heads. We were not getting along. And
Oh
I
no.
feel like, yeah, I wasn't. He wasn't able to show up for me the way I wanted it at that time. So he stayed with me in the van for like, it got fixed. We ended up, I think I kicked him out in New Mexico. So
You
we had
made
a
it
good little
one
chapter
state.
together. Yeah.
That's funny.
And driving through Texas takes a long time. So it was nice to have him with me for that section. He gets kicked out of the van, and I'm just like, I need a soul search for the rest of the drive back to California and feel into connecting with this baby and, what it is that I really want. And the more I kept driving, the more and more I felt I had a yes. And I won't get into too much, how things unfolded, but ultimately, when I arrived in California, I wasn't feeling good. I was feeling like this flame of passion and connection and joy that I had inside of me wasn't being met. And I became really sad. I started feeling really sick too. I think just like my pregnancy nausea came on, and I wasn't making a distinction being pregnant for the first time that that was pregnancy. And I was like, this emotional pain is really knocking me out. But it's both things. So I decided that what I would do was I would give myself 24 hours to embody my no. I had been so clear in this yes that I was going to go through with this pregnancy, and I thought, what if I pretend for, 24 hours, I don't have to make a decision. I'm just going to see what it feels like if I've decided a no and what comes up. But I'm not going to do it today. I'll do it tomorrow morning. So I go to bed, I wake up that morning, I roll over, I check my phone was one of the first things I did at that time. Try not to do that as much anymore, but check my phone, and the very first thing is a new podcast episode on the Medicine Stories podcast that the episode is something about like herbal abortion at home, something like that. And I thought, oh wow, well that's really interesting that this was released today, the day I'm embodying my no. And I think the reason I was met with so much resistance, I mean, there's so many reasons, but I couldn't ever envision myself going into a clinic for an abortion, like this cold, sterile environment with strangers, and like that was just not even within the realms of possibility for me. I grew up with a very alternative, holistically minded mom. Like we didn't usually go to normal doctors, like it was just that wasn't gonna happen. So this episode was the first time that there was an avenue presented to me that felt possible, where I was like, oh, I can have this experience of choosing no and choosing to release, and it can still be completely imbued with ritual and ceremony and intention and privacy and safety in my own home. Which I think are all other words for like really keeping my power and not outsourcing. And that's what I ended up deciding to do. And so I worked with a series of different herbs for about a week. And
where would you place yourself in the pregnancy?
I was about 9 weeks.
Okay.
This time. And I obtained misoprostol from a woman online who I was connected with, who, you know, supports women. And I could have gotten it in California, but I think she supports women who don't have access to abortion medications. And So that was the path I went. I don't want to speak so specifically about what I did, because I actually also want to say that I don't necessarily recommend what I did. I've supported a lot of women with pregnancy release, and I did it and it worked for me, but I don't necessarily recommend it. And I also actually hired a doula for myself, which I'm really glad that I did that. So
you mean you don't recommend the miso?
Not necessarily. I wouldn't recommend like poisoning your body with all of these herbs for a week before taking the misoprostol.
Totally. I mean, that's what I was going to say. Just, you know, there's a lot about this conversation that is not really the intention of this episode, but it is my experience and understanding that it's very hard to successfully have an herbal termination after a couple weeks of pregnancy, you know, I'd even say after implantation. And I don't think women, not that you did that, you did plants and then miso, but yeah, I think maybe what you're hinting at is like, you could have just done miso, because that's actually what did it, you know?
Yeah.
At 9 weeks.
Yeah. I think, who knows? You know, I've heard so many stories, and we'll never really know. I feel like the relationship with the herbs, and just like so much of it is our emotional, energetic body too. And how attached, there's so much going on when our body releases a pregnancy. That's more than just like the mechanics of it, that for me, I derived a lot of meaning from working with those plants. Mm-hmm. But I think there's this misconception that like, if you work with herbs for an abortion, it's more natural. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's true at all, actually, anymore. Working with all of those herbs has to go through all of your organ systems, and you have to process. So,
totally
closing that chapter of the conversation, it's a big one that I love having with women in a different setting. Anyhow,
So you hire a doula, you take the miso, you're doing it as a ceremony, you have clarity. Is Sebastian a part of this?
He wasn't. I didn't want him to be part of it, partly because of how we had been disconnecting leading up to that decision.
Yeah.
But I was in his apartment. You know, I wasn't in my van. And that was great. And yeah, I collected the contents of my uterus over a bowl and got to return that to the ocean and just have a lot of ritual that was meaningful to me and really anchored me into that experience. And I was shaken for sure. Mm-hmm. But my consciousness and my womb, I had just gone through such a huge expansion that I saw myself at a crossroads where I could either kind of shut down, move away from this experience, leave the relationship, start a new chapter, like sort of dissociate, just be like, go over here. That felt easy. And then there was all of this voice of Emily Saldea at the beginning of the Free Birth Society episodes talking about the Radical Birth Keeper School. And that was in such resonance with me that I thought, or I can look this experience right in the eyes and realize that I know I've always wanted to be a mother. I feel so sad that I chose to release this pregnancy. I never, you know, saw myself doing that or wanting to choose something like that. And I want to make sure that I am never in this position again, that if I ever become pregnant, that I feel so resourced, so, you know, internally resourced, that it's just clear. And, you know, I was 22 and I didn't really know anything about birth or pregnancy at that time.
Sure.
And I just became so obsessed with birth there, you know, moving forward, and loved every moment of the RBK school. I studied with Rochelle Garcia Saliga and Innate Traditions at the same time. So I was also diving into postpartum care and just expanding my consciousness and really, you know, feeling all these bells ringing because I was in alignment with what feels like my soul's calling and my purposeful work. And that was awesome and a great way to heal through that experience. So we'll fast forward a little bit here in my story. I started attending Sovereign Birth, thought that was the coolest thing ever. It was very clear to me that whenever I became pregnant again with Sebastian, that I would want to have a sovereign birth. And yeah, Margot was, my daughter was also conceived in Erica's RV driving cross country.
You're an RV girl. You're a camper girl.
Don't say that, please.
It's your RV. You bought it.
Yeah, we did at that time.
And that's, so what's the timeline here? You took RBK in 2020?
I think that I took RBK in the spring of 2021 because my pregnancy release, I believe, was in the winter, the end of 2020. Yeah, so I think that was, when did you start? Did you start RBK in 2020? I think I was maybe the third round.
Yeah.
Yep. And then let's see.
So you stay with Sebastian, you take RBK, and you start attending births. I mean, that's a really big deal that you're attending prior to your baby. Like, how many births had you gone to before you became a mom?
Just a couple. Not a lot, but they were so profound, such profound experiences for me, where it was just the only way. It was just the only way. And it really helped me to get clear on what I wanted, to get clear on what I didn't want. It was so wonderful. There's not really words.
Because yeah, no, totally. I'm just like imagining. Imagine if all maidens could witness sovereign birth before they step in. Kind of at the same time, I'm also like, man, I wish every woman could see a hospital birth to know what they're choosing, you know, because I'm pretty convinced if everyone saw what I've seen, they wouldn't choose it because it's evil.
Yeah, I have never, I
mean, you weren't tempted.
Birth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's beautiful that you attended prior. Okay, so then you come out here to buy that RV and then you conceive on the way out home?
Yeah, that was just crazy. We bought the RV and we took it to Burning Man. I didn't know that I was pregnant.
Okay.
And anyway, found out when I got back to California. I had a suspicion. My period was late again. And, well, it's also worth saying, even though it wasn't a conscious conception, I had attended Matriarch Rising Festival earlier that summer, and I participated in one of Sister Morningstar's village prenatal ceremonies, where, you know, it's literally an inner circle of pregnant women sitting back to back with women who want to conceive, and I chose to sit in that circle surrounded by another concentric circle of mothers, and we're all singing like Wild Woman Mother Midwife and Healer, we will give birth. So I'm just like in this absolute vortex on your land. It was so powerful that, you know, I put a target on my back for my baby, like, okay, I'm ready.
Well, we need to have like a disclaimer at checkout, you know, that's like, you're probably going to get pregnant if you want to get pregnant when you leave here.
Yeah. So at my village prenatals now, when we go through visioning your dream birth and different parts of the day, I make it very clear, because sometimes we do have maidens come to the village prenatals, that if you do not want to conceive, hold that intention right now. Like, it's part of my village prenatals, because I know how important it is, and spirit baby connection is a big part of my life. That's something that I take, yeah, very seriously and lightheartedly, because it's just so joyful, but has been very real for me. Mm-hmm. So I find out that I'm pregnant. I'm so excited. Sebastian is so excited. I told you before we started recording how I took my pregnancy test at Maitreya, which is this wonderful zen nude hot tub sauna zen garden situation.
Bathhouse, yeah.
Yeah, it's this awesome place, and I
And
knew
this is
that.
only like a year later from when you had your pregnancy release, right? Timeline wise, it's like the following fall.
Yeah, she was conceived in the end of August, so
Yeah.
and I had grown so much as a young woman, still a young woman, but I had grown so much in that year. It's just so amazing to reflect back on and find out I'm pregnant. I'm super excited. At the time, Sebastian was still living in San Francisco, but I had moved down to Santa Cruz. I was living in the Santa Cruz Mountains with one of my closest friends in this really awesome off-grid yurt. And I was also living there. I took the Blood Mystery School before all of this also. So that was another really like unconscious, conscious way that I feel I called in my baby and was preparing for pregnancy, was just going so deep into learning about cycle tracking and optimizing my fertility and living cyclically, embodying all of the goddess archetypes, and really just so in touch with myself, so in touch with my body, my rhythms, and doing that work at this off-grid yurt that I was living in, and just being able to be naked outside all day, giving my blood to the earth, really resting like I had never rested before during my bleed. I'm so grateful for that time because that also all, just led into preparing myself to call in my daughter. So I was still living there, and I met this amazing woman who's one of my closest friends, Nina, who's also been on this podcast, and she reached out to me through the Free Birth Society membership to potentially interview me to attend her birth. And on our first walk, meeting each other by the ocean, we discovered that I told her I was also pregnant and that I was due around expecting my baby around the same time. And so I probably wouldn't be a good candidate for her birth, but that we should totally stay friends. And we ended out starting our first village prenatal together for ourselves.
Cute. Love
And
it.
that was so sweet. So there was a group of five of us, and spoiler alert, one of the women, Hope, ended up free birthing her daughter. Let's see, on I think April 18th. I think I have that right. Then Nina free birthed her son on April 22nd. Or sorry, I'm saying April, I mean May. May 18th, May 22nd, and then Margot, my daughter, was born on May 23rd. So three of us free birthed within a week of each other.
Cute.
And that was so exciting to just travel through the village prenatal together, start, holding that space for the first time because I wanted it so badly for myself. And also, I started attending Nina's women's circle that she started up at that time. And I was the only maiden that was going. And so that was so. I'm sharing this because when I think about, I had a wild pregnancy, shocker. And when I think about what was really the most potent prenatal care for me, it was my women's circle for sure. Just
Course.
going and being in this circle with all other mothers and hearing these heart shares about their life and their joys and challenges, and being in that community was the absolute best prenatal care I could have received. It was so nourishing to me. And yeah, let's see. I had an awesome pregnancy. I spent a lot of time in nature. We ended out, there was some weird stuff that happened with my housing, and so we moved, and that was really nice to finally move into a home with Sebastian. I had been living with him in his apartment, like part-time in San Francisco for a few years at that point, but to have a space that we were creating together too, that we knew our child would be born into. And my very dear friend Sydney, who I was living with in the yurt, since we had to move out of there, I wasn't ready to like let go of this piece of my maidenhood where I was still living with my bestie. So she came and lived with us too, which was
That's
awesome.
funny.
Yeah, because that was my birth team, was Sydney and Sebastian, and it
Cute.
worked perfectly because she lived with us. Yeah, and I did some awesome things in my pregnancy that I was really proud of. I went on a backpacking trip up in Death Valley when I was 6 months pregnant and hiked about like a 4,000 elevation gain in the duration of 6 miles. So a really strenuous hike. And I was kind of angry with Sebastian during the hike, so I did it like almost completely by myself. But I think about experiences like that of being held by nature as really what prepared me for my birth too. So deeply, like just the inner dialogue, the connection with my baby, the connection with my body of like literally hiking a mountain was such a great way to prepare for having a sovereign birth and just birth in general.
What would you
And
say was the work of your pregnancy? You know, being a woman who now has seen some sovereign births, which is a huge leg up that most people don't have, knowing that you're aligned with this way, you have this wonderful community of support, but you're still a first-time pregnant, woman planning what most people do not choose. And so, did you find it to be hard and heady and like at, in the deprogramming that naturally kind of occurs when you're on this path?
no.
Or did it, was it, was
I
pretty
think I
easy?
did a lot of that work in processing and integrating the release of my first pregnancy and what that really meant to me and what it was that who I wanted to be if I were to choose to become a mother. And that's not to say I didn't do a lot of deep work when I was pregnant, but most of it wasn't so much about me. A lot of it was related to my family. I was struggling in my relationships with my mother and my sisters during that time. And I also, something about me is that I'm hyper vigilant about energetic hygiene. And I, let's see how to say this. I wanted, once, as for Sebastian and I entering parenthood together to feel like there was no baggage, there was nothing that was untended to in our relationship. And so we created a format where we were scheduling, I think, a minimum of two, but at certain times it was more, weekly check-ins where it was just like, it's you and me, no phones, we're gonna sit down together and we're gonna excavate all of any old wounding, anything that hasn't been processed, and really meet each other deeply and hold each other where we need to be held and tend to any pain or resentments or anything at all, so that we are just like going into parenthood from this healed place that's just so has so much intention. And we've really done this groundwork of building a strong foundation for our family, of knowing how to move through conflict resolution and what our different styles are. And that was so important to me. So there was a lot of work done in my pregnancy, but it was a lot related to our relationship. And yeah, I guess sort of like the pain that I had felt from not being supported in the way that I wanted the first time around that I had become pregnant. So that, yeah, it was big work and it was awesome and I'm so proud of us. So I had a really amazing mother blessing ceremony too. And that was just so wonderful. And most of the, I had a few mother friends there, but at that time in my life, most of my friends were still maidens. So it was really exciting to get to sort of be an example to my community of maiden friends at the time. Like, hey, when you become pregnant, I also wanna to honor you and sing songs and decorate your belly and rub your feet and just have a really meaningful ritual together. And that was so special. Another highlight of my prenatal care for sure. Being in that intentional community with women and opening up to the vulnerability to receive these reflections from my women and receive their blessings for my birth. And then when I was 33 weeks pregnant, I went to an ancestral skills gathering, and I went by myself. Sebastian wasn't available at the time. And during the duration of this week-long gathering, I tanned my first sheep hide. And that was another thing that I talk about because it felt like I reflect on it thinking about it as this labor of love. It's a very intensive, it took about 4 full days of work, and I was quite pregnant at the time. And we'll get to my birth soon. It was very fast. So I think about being in relationship with my daughter and working on something together, working on something strenuous. And I had the intention as I was tanning this hide that I would give birth on it, and I would, my baby wouldn't rest on it, and it would be a gift for her, and she would have it for the rest of her life. So there was so much intention and ceremony that went into that project, really about death too, because I'm taking this animal flesh that's like muddy and bloody and fleshy, and breathing life back into it, and doing that in partnership with my baby who's in my belly. And I feel like, yeah, there were just these different moments I identify where there was so much intention that who knows if my birth would have been fast anyway if I hadn't done those things, but it felt like I like this sort of pseudo version of pre-labor because of just how significant those experiences were me in my mind, body, spiritual experience of going through them. When I was 40 weeks pregnant, I was kind of tired of waiting around, and I decided to go on a camping trip with my husband, Sebastian, and Sydney and her partner. And we were about 3.5 hour drive from where we live, and I remember pulling up into the campsite, and Ryan jogged over to the car window, and he's just like, "Hey, Kate, having any contractions?" And I was just like, at first I was like, "No, that's ridiculous. Like, I wouldn't be here out in the wilderness if I were, in labor already." But I loved that he asked me that because it made me reflect, and I was like, "Well, what if I do go into labor while we're
Didn't
out?"
you consider that before you left?
No, I think I did, but it validated for me just like once I was there, it's not like, okay, we're turning the car around right now, that I just knew I had everything that I needed.
Fair enough.
My whole birth team was there, Sydney and Sebastian, at the river, heat sources.
I mean, that is one of the coolest parts about free birth. You don't
Yeah.
need shit. You can just be wherever you are.
And I was pretty fixated that, like, I wanted to be outside, and I wanted elemental connection to be part of my labor. And I, made this whole drama where I borrowed from a friend this huge bell tent that was in our backyard, and I was like, set it up. I was like, "That's where I want to labor, and I want to give birth under these oak trees." And like, I was really thought I wanted to give birth
Specific.
outside. And when it came to the time, I was like, "There's no way I'm going to be
No way.
outside."
But I still think there's something, because that's very common. I think that women create, maybe not that like beautifully elaborate, but decorating a room that you imagine you're going to birth in. And obviously the joke is like, it's usually not where you're going to birth. You're usually going to just like get stuck on the toilet and never leave, and it's not what someone imagined. But I still think there's a lot of ceremony and purpose and value in the time it takes to create these beautiful spaces. Even if you never birth in them, there's still something like, because you're dreaming and you're putting so much vision into whatever space you're decorating. It doesn't even really matter if you wind up going there or not. I still think it's so just sweet.
Absolutely. And thank you for that reflection. I think it's so apt and true. That was real for me. And I ended up having my mother blessing in that bell tent because
Oh, yeah.
and it was awesome. So
So you make it through the camping trip.
I make it through the camping trip. I end up giving birth 2 days after we got back. So it could have happened. And meanwhile, I'm like going on rope swings and jumping into these river swimming holes and hiking and whatever we're doing. And also part of a deep nature connection, preparing for my birth, being in my body. And I get home and I'm like, okay, it's getting close. So what needs to be done for me to feel fully ready? Last things checked off the list was to finish filling my postpartum freezer. So I woke up on the morning of May 22nd, 2023, and to this wonderful news that my dear sister Nina had given birth to her son that night before. And in our village prenatal group, that there was five of us, Hope had already had her baby a week before, then Nina had her baby, and there was two other sisters who were pregnant, but I knew that they would be expecting to welcome their babies after me. So in my consciousness, I didn't even like allow myself to think like, oh, I could give birth until Nina had birth.
Totally.
And so as soon as I found out she had given
You're
birth,
next.
I was like, it's my turn. Like yeah, exactly. I'm next. I didn't realize it was going to be that night. But so I spent, I'm so excited with that news in the morning. I decide I need to get caught up on the FBS podcast. I think I had like a few episodes I was
A cram
behind.
session.
Yeah, so I'm in my kitchen from like 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. I end up listening to Meg, Erica, and your birth stories that day. And they're all big stories, actually. And I
We're
realized,
all like, it was
yeah, I'm gonna say that, but like, just describing these excruciating, painful hell, like characters, like I was in hell.
That's really funny.
And
Wait, which Meg? Sister Nettle Meg or Meg Edwards?
I think Meg Edwards.
Okay, who had the really fast first birth?
Yes, but well, yeah, she describes. Yeah, I think so. I can't really remember, to be honest. But anyway, three big stories. I definitely was impacted by yours and Erica's. And then in like the online village prenatal that I was also part of through the members through the Lighthouse, there was a sister who was, we were matched up in our gestation, and she had just given birth like a few days before, and also a first-time mom, and I absorbed her story, which, was very long, whatever. So basically, the reflection that I have was that I internalize all of these stories, and I will not be listening to other people's birth stories at the very end of my
Right before
pregnancy
you go into labor,
ever
yeah.
again. But I was just so committed, I suppose, to the idea that I'm a first-time mom, and so I'm probably going to have a really, really long labor, and it might, anything less than 4 days will be great. I was just so, yeah, that I was prepared for that. Well, I don't know if I was prepared for it, but that was my expectation. And
But those chicks always get the fast births. The women that do that, it's smart, man. I mean,
you
there's
go.
downsides to it, but
Yeah, I so it's about 10 p.m. I have been literally on my feet all day long in the kitchen cooking. My feet were hurting so badly, and I asked Sebastian just to please get in bed with me and rub my feet. And I pulled a vanilla pudding cup out of the fridge, and I was like, I'm gonna eat my vanilla pudding, get a foot rub, we can turn on a show, and I'm gonna pass out and rest, go to sleep, and that's all I want. And I was just so excited to sleep. Ha ha ha. So I'm lying in bed, and we had just started a new show, and it was like the second episode. And I just thought it was interesting that in the episode we were watching, it was like the main character's daughter's birthday. But we only got like a few minutes into it, and I was just started feeling really psychedelic, and I couldn't look at a screen. I didn't want to watch it. I got up and felt like I had to poop. And it was like loose. I didn't have diarrhea, but it was definitely this spontaneous cleansing, my body just preparing. And I thought I kind of was like, oh, that this might be that. That's interesting. Got back in bed and it was on. I mean, just started feeling the sensations come on pretty strong from the very beginning. There wasn't really any easing into it, maybe a little bit for the first like 20 minutes or so. And Sebastian kind of realized that I was feeling uncomfortable, feeling sensations. And so he, I think, got up to go get me a glass of water or something. And I went and I wanted to brush my teeth and just like
Yeah.
hope that I could go to sleep. And so I'm in the bathroom just like feeling them come on and realizing while he's out of the room like that I couldn't do anything while the sensations were happening. I totally needed to pause and just like lean over the sink and let it wash over me. So by the time he comes back in the room, hadn't been that long, I'm just sort of in it already. And he's like, "Hey, babe, like, how you feeling? What's going on?" Noticing things are happening, and I couldn't even respond to him because I was in the middle of a sensation. And so it ended, and I just like turned to him and draped my arms around his shoulder, I think put my forehead to his chest, and another one came on. I didn't say anything. And it was this really sweet moment. I think that this is one of my favorite moments of my birth, one of two of my favorite moments where we had this beautiful moment of intimacy that would be our last as a couple of just the two of us before meeting our baby, and that I was holding on to the splendor of this not so secret that things were happening, and I didn't need to vocalize that to him or say anything about it. I kind of got to just like keep the excitement for myself. And even if I hadn't like fully consciously admitted it to myself, my body knew what was going on, and I just remember what it felt like to be in that the magic of the birth portal opening and have that really tender hug from him. I always remember how that felt, just to be so supported and held by him and so grateful for him and our love and our relationship. So I very quickly decide that everyone immediately needs to go to sleep and get as much, and I'm just, starting barking orders like everybody needs to go to sleep right now. But before I allowed myself to fully rest, I noticed that there were a few vases of flowers in my bedroom that the flowers were kind of wilty and had died. And I just thought, like, I can't have
Can't
this
have
in here.
that.
Nope. So
No,
I know that, my
a slippery slope
sensations
though,
are
because then you're gonna keep finding shit.
right. I like rushed these flowers out of my room, and Sebastian had got me some beautiful sunflowers that were in the kitchen. So I got those and I refreshed my altar. And in that sort of thoughtless, just intuitively led moment, I lit a candle, and they were like these mini candles, the circumference of your normal candlesticks, but just like half size maybe. And I had multiple options of candles on my birth altar, which had been set up probably for weeks, but I was like, well, this couldn't really be happening, so I'm not gonna like light, all the candles. We'll just start with this little one. And I light that candle and go try to get in bed, which was impossible. I couldn't lie down at all, but it was very important to me that Sebastian go to sleep. So we turn off all the lights, and he was so sweet for humoring me and pretending to sleep. And I end up, getting comfortable on non-comfortable, trying to get comfortable on the floor, on my sheepskin that I had tanned, and leaning over pillows. And I think I stayed in that place in the quiet, not really alone, but like liking to believe that Sebastian was sleeping, and went into this deep inner meditation. It was so intense. I mean, I think probably at this point, every 5 minutes, maybe, and it had st I'd maybe been in it for about 30 minutes at this time. And I started having this like visual hallucination in my mind, of a white spherical portal, and it was like this white ovular shape in the distance, and it was moving closer to me, and all around it was black and darkness, but in that darkness was fertility, was this sort of rainbow, fractal, opalescent, but also darkness background, and this white portal that I came to think about later as a moon pearl that really represented my daughter. It was getting closer to me, and the mantra, I suppose, that came into my mind when I experienced that visual was, "The universe is coming." So I just kind of kept saying to myself, "The universe is coming. The whole
That's
universe
cute.
is coming."
Yep.
And
Coming for you, Kate.
it was coming for me. Yep. And just wanting to surrender as deeply as I could, just to trying to soften into the sensations. I was saying, take me, and kind of this balance between having the intention in my mind that I wanted to soften and allow and melt and open and be swept away by the sensations of birth, while simultaneously trying to not be in my mind and not think about it. So I'm kind of in this place, and things are real intense. So I pretty quickly end up saying, "Hey, babe, I think I'm ready to not be alone." And he just jolts out of bed, this eager puppy dog, obviously wasn't dead asleep, and so excited to finally be welcomed and in service to me. And I think he started filling up the tub, and we had this giant iron clawfoot bathtub that was from the 70s, maybe, with these brass gold finishings. There's this beautiful bathtub that a friend of mine had texted me a few weeks before, and they were moving, and she owns this bathtub, and she was like, "Hey, we can't take the bathtub with us. Can you store this bathtub for me?" And the name, the product name of this bathtub that was created in, I think, the 70s was called the Birthday Tub. She's like, "Can
Cute.
you host the Birthday Tub for me?" And I, at the time, didn't, we didn't
Post
have
it.
a, we didn't have a bathtub at our house, and I really wanted there to be some
Yeah.
sort of water element. So I was like, "Yeah, totally, that sounds amazing." I mean, it was hundreds of pounds, this ridiculous charade to have it picked up from her house and brought into our house, and it's not connected to the plumbing, so we had to have
Oh.
these hoses connected to the sink, and then a drain.
It's
It was just,
basically as complicated as possible.
yes, very much. And God bless my loving husband, so in service to helping this.
It's basically just a really heavy birth pool, right? You just do it the same way as a birth pool,
Yeah.
like
So,
hose-wise.
yeah.
That's funny.
And it there was just it was very complicated. So anyway, he starts filling it, and I get in there pretty soon, and that was feeling amazing, just having the warm water on my belly and connecting with my prayers of being held by the water and softening and opening. And yeah, I started singing a song that about spirit guides, a song from Hannah Lee that she had taught me, and was a really powerful mantra for me in my birth. And yeah, I had at my mother blessing, I had the women make me birth affirmation cards. I think I got that idea from you. And so they were displayed next to me in the bathtub, and one of them was "Let It All Be Here," and that was really
That's
soothing to
nice.
me. Yeah, so I was,
Are
impossible
you
to get comfortable in the bath. But
willing to share the Hannah Lay song?
yeah, sure. Let's see. I haven't sang this in a while. It goes, "Spirit guides helping us to open to this life. Spirit guides asking us to see with new eyes. Whoa-ho-ho, trusting in this moment, oh. Whoa-ho-ho, trusting in this life." And it repeats like that, so it's perfect for me. It's about,
I'm just impressed you could sing a song during your birth.
yeah,
I
kind
could
of
barely think.
just like humming it to myself. I think that,
Yeah.
I was aware of this, of the mirror in our body, of our vocal
Sure.
canal and our lips and our vaginal canal and our vaginal lips, and the symmetry in our body, and this, idea that if we can relax our jaws and our throats, that that can maybe be a mirror in our body. And I was willing to try
Yeah, that's
that.
awesome.
Anything, right? But I was definitely in pain and stuff, going through an experience of suffering that was primarily informed by the fact that I felt so exhausted from having been on my feet all day. And then I was creating a drama that I was going to be in labor for multiple days on
Right.
end, and because I was beginning it not
Yeah.
like so tired,
Self-defeating. Yeah.
yeah, that, oh man, I was being I guess hard, just hard on myself. Like, this is not how it's
Well,
supposed to
when
be.
you make up the story, or when you assume your birth's going to be super long, how you enter it just matters more, because I get it. I mean, that is a really self-defeating thought of you're already exhausted, especially your labor starts before you can sleep. And so, you don't know that it's only going to be what you said, 5 hours or something, but
Three and a half,
oh my God, that's so fast. But it is a good, I mean, it's just a such a it's such a tall order. It is such a giant ask, but it must be done to get past these assumptions where we have to, just like how we have to be ready to birth our babies by, let's say, 34, 35 weeks, and then just hang out and be totally chill about it for another 2 months, And then in the birth process, you have to be both totally prepared for 4 days, particularly if it's your first time, and also totally ready to be so present that you can track with what is actually there. Like, that's a really tall order.
And what made it even trippier for me was that I never leaked any waters. My waters didn't open until Margot emerged. We'll get to that point. I didn't have a bloody show. I didn't lose my mucus plug. So there was no, in terms of my training of and the minimal experience I had at births, where there's like some clear physiologic
Sometimes,
signs,
yeah.
sometimes, right? I was just expecting to get a little bit of validation from
Totally.
my body. Like, I would have taken
Little heads
one
up.
drop of blood
Yeah.
just to be like,
Or like when you were cooking all day to have been having sensations, would have been nice.
Absolutely. So
But
I.
this is why these stories matter so much, because you're describing a totally normal birth, of course, because it is and it was. And some births do go like that. And a lot of women don't know that. Even birth keepers don't know that. Yeah, of course, you can totally just stop, drop, and it's on, with no pre-signs. Of course, there's so many ways. Wow. Okay. So you're in the tub, you're singing,
I'm in the
and
tub.
you've been like, you're like an hour in or something
Yeah, probably
ish.
something like that. And I realize that I don't have my beverage line up. So I'm like, okay, Sebastian, I think it's time to wake up Sydney. And thinking that I'm going to be, it's just the very beginning and I'm going to need her later. Just, have her go get the beverages and then tell her to go right back to sleep so that she can be well rested, because I'm so fixated that other people need to sleep because I'm so exhausted.
You are like managing this
Oh
birth.
my gosh, yes. And so he gets Sydney, and at this point, like, even the sound of him opening the door to go in the hallway, just excruciating, so bothersome, so irritating. And she can't possibly have imagined that I'm so deep in it already. I think has a lot of extensive experience with animal births, which I loved and was part of why I wanted her, but had never been to a human birth before. And I was just in the kitchen with her, like, just before. So she comes in and she's so excited
Oh
and
God, get out.
she's
Shut up, get out.
she might have only said one sentence to me, just like, "You're doing great. I'm so," but it was, she didn't realize that I was so in it. And I will say that I'm so grateful for her presence. Her role, bringing the beverages was awesome. And it was very brief, but I was in the tub and I reached out of the tub and draped my arms around her for one hug. And during that hug, a sensation came on. So she just held me during one of the sensations. And that was the only time during my entire birth that I cried. And I think it was just like the safety of being held by a sister, and she is a wise woman, and just having her presence and connection allowed me to soften in this way that I don't, for some reason, I didn't feel like I really could with Sebastian. So, loved that she was part of it, and then get out of here, go back to bed. And after she leaves, it's so intense, and I realized that I was going through transition in the tub because I started to say, I started to think, you know, this, I'm just at the beginning. This hasn't been going on for that long. If it's this intense
Yeah,
for
you're gonna
another
die.
few days, I can't do this. And
No.
I was, you know, empathizing with women who want to use drugs and, you know, have hospital births and all this stuff. And I was like, I totally understand why you would want that. And then, and so I said to Sebastian, no matter what happens, just don't give up on me. Just keep believing in me. Even if I think I can't do it, you have to keep believing in me because I'm
Yeah.
afraid that I'm gonna think I can't do it anymore. And of course, as soon as I allow myself to be there and say that, it shifts and I feel ready to get out of the tub, and it becomes far less excruciating after that point. And I get out of the tub and I want to be positioned with, you know, on my sheepskin in front of my altar. And I decided to go into a state of prayer and pray at my altar and can just connect in because I needed more support, and that felt resonant. But it was this type of prayer where, let's see, sometimes when I pray or when people pray, I think it can be very specific with the words of like what the content of your prayer is. And there's this other way of praying that I had been meditating on recently where you don't need to have any words in your mind, but whatever the frequency is that you're emitting from your heart, whatever your intention is that's in your heart, that's even more powerful, and that can be heard and felt and amplified. And I was so exhausted that it wasn't like I had all this creative energy to formulate a mental prayer, and I didn't want to be in my mind anyway. But it was this beautiful, profound experience of prayer that I could probably only access during a birthing experience where I'm so present in my body with the sensations, with the profundity of, you know, this precipice of meeting my baby, and still having these visuals of this spherical, portal, the opalescent portal that's approaching me, and it's getting closer. And so I just sent out a prayer to my spirit guides and my angels, just, you know, I want to make sure that I'm held and protected and my baby's safe. But just, you know, without those words, that was really what the frequency was about.
It's psychedelic. It's hard to articulate.
Exactly. So I just was filled up with this rush, this sensational rush of validation, this response from God, like, we got you, you're good. And then I think around that time, I looked down and there was maybe 3 drops of blood. And I just thought, oh, thank God. And as soon as I saw that blood, which our blood is so powerful always, it was so comforting to me, and I saw it reflected back to me in my blood, my own power. And I just knew. I think at that point is when I finally actually surrendered in a totally different way than I imagined what type of surrendering I would need to be doing, which was the surrendering to like, this is happening, like, just be with it as it is right now.
Yeah,
And
stuff came in and out.
exactly. And so I finally accepted where I was at. And it felt like for the first time in my birth that I was in integrity in my body and my mind and spirit. I was in alignment.
You like caught up.
Yep, exactly. And that's, you know, I think one thing about births that are so fast is that they can be so shocking that just to be dropped into it, I didn't
Totally.
have time to like to mentally prepare, like, oh, this is happening.
This is early labor. This is active
Yeah,
labor. Transition will
right.
be soon. Yeah, totally.
Yes.
It's a big deal.
Yeah. So I'm very open to receiving that type of experience of birth in the future, just to put that out there. And
At this point on the sheepskin with the blood, you're like integrated now.
I'm integrated, I'm caught up. And in doing that, I also felt a shift in the physical sensation. Like before, it was just the most agonizing pain. And now it was still painful, but more than that, I was able to be in awe. I was able to be in beauty and just experience aspects of bliss and excitement of what was happening. And it just totally transformed everything. And so at that point, I knew that Sebastian had, you know, no idea that we were actually getting that close. I think I asked him at one point, like, are you filming? which wasn't something I thought I would care about. But then when I realized, like, oh, it's happening right now, and he was like, oh no, no, I'm not. And then he was like, well, I was just gonna fill up the tub again. Like, do you want me to go? I was just gonna go start filling up the tub. And as I've described, it's a very complicated, loud situation. And so I was horrified. I was like, why would you do that? The baby's coming. And he, got caught up to speed and realized. So I started feeling her crowning. And one thing also that was interesting to me about my birth was that all of my sensations came on very fast and were very close together from the beginning. And the closer I got to her emergence, the farther apart they were. So that's also part of what I think, after transition made it more bearable for me, was I had a slightly longer rest in between. And I think there was maybe about nine sensations between, feeling her start to descend and her being out. And at one point, this is my other favorite moment of my birth, which I know is thematic. This is a favorite of many women's in their birth, when you reach down and you feel. And I felt her water bag bulging out of me, and it was squishy. But then I hooked my fingers up and reached around that, and I could feel her head. And that was so awe-inspiring to know that we were so close. I was so close to holding my baby. And so it was only maybe one or two sensations after that, and she shot right out. Sebastian was behind me to catch her, and she was sort of born on, she was born on call in the sense that she had an intact water bag in her emergence, but as she ejected herself from my body, it opened. So it wasn't like she was born in a sack that I then ripped open. And she just splashed right into her daddy's hands, and he passed her up through my legs to me, and I, immediately, and I held her, and she was crying immediately, pink and very vigorous in her body, and her arms were outstretched like this. And one of the very first things that I said to her when I held her and I looked at her and saw she was a girl was, you look like my dad. You look just like
Oh,
my dad.
that's cute.
And in retrospect, I remembered that when I told my father that I was pregnant, the first thing that he did was he reached both of his arms up over his head, and he just went, yes.
Cute.
And so it was just funny that, like, I looked at her and the first thing I said to her was, you look like my dad. And she has her like victorious little arms outstretched. And then I very, very quickly shifted into becoming my own midwife. I called right away also, like, Sydney, get in here. And she and Sebastian are there. They're crying. They're just like in awe. And I'm like starting to bark orders. I'm like, okay, I need socks on my feet. I need a warm blanket. Like, come on, people. It's, immediately feels freezing after you're super hot. And So I wanted it to be over. I mean, it had been fast, but it was so excruciating. And I wrapped my fingers around my cord and gave my placenta a tug to see if she was ready. And she wasn't. And I knew I was, being impatient, but worth it, worth a try. And so I sat there with Margot and just admired her. And one other aspect that I'll share is that, so I was born at 2:33 a.m. and Margot was born at 2:34 a.m., 1 minute after me. And at the very beginning of my pregnancy, I was at a Yom Kippur earth-based Judaism camp out in Sonoma, and an aspect of the ceremony was going into an ancestral council where we were led by elders in this guided meditation that if you were to call a council of your ancestors, who would come, who would be there, and what would you talk about? And I was newly pregnant with Margot at the time. I think it was my birthday that day. And I went into this meditation, and my grandfather, Robert Gold, my Papa Bob, he showed up and he was hand in hand with my child that I was pregnant with. And he said, I am going to walk with your, I didn't know she was a girl at the time, but I'm going to walk with your child to the threshold and be with her and care for her and protect her and honor her and love her. And I got you. And anytime that throughout my entire pregnancy that I felt sad or anxious or stressed or anything, it was like his energy would just come into the room and I could feel him holding my hand and it changed everything. It just softened everything and I
So
felt
sweet.
so supported and so deeply connected with him. And he had passed maybe a year or two before I was pregnant. And throughout his life, he would sleep with an alarm clock, a clock in his room. And his sort of thing, his numerological connection was that he always would see 1, 2, 3, 4 on the clock, like all the time. That was his thing. 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. And after he passed, myself and my mother and my grandmother, we started seeing 1, 2, 3, 4 a lot. And that felt really, connective to him. So and he had a very robust sense of humor. So I sort of interpreted her birth that he was like, okay, Margo, it's 2, 3, 4 a.m.
Yeah,
You
you
better be
gotta
born
get out.
right now and you can borrow the one as the
That's
difference of your
cute.
mom's birth time. Otherwise, she has to be in this for another however many hours. So that was really beautiful. And there's a lot of meaning in her name. She's my great grandmother's name was Margaret, and she had five children, and all of their names start with MAR. So the MAR theme is big in my family, and her maiden name was Margaret Gordon, and then my grandmother's name is Marcia Gold. So she has this MARGO from her maternal line. And I named her Margo Luna. She told me her name actually during my pregnancy. I was awoken on a night of a full moon and it just came streaming into my consciousness what her name would be. And so when I held her there and she was sort of born on call, she was just like this shimmering moon pearl. Margo means pearl and Luna obviously means moon, and it just felt like so much alignment with the timing of her birth and all of these synchronicities surrounding her. And I held her in my arms and just thought, she is this perfect shimmering little moon pearl. And that was what I was seeing in my mind's eye, this portal approaching me. And she like didn't even have any blood on her or meconium. I didn't really barely notice any vernix, maybe a little bit. And that was her. That was my Margot. And so I got into bed. I ended up resting in bed for a little bit and then trying again to get up to birth my placenta, which I ended up just putting a bowl over the toilet and wrapping my fingers around the cord again, giving a good yank. And it definitely took more effort than I was expecting, but just such sweet relief after. And that was followed by a lot of blood. I had very little blood during my birth, but then after the placenta and after Margot came out, there was, of course,
It's
and
all got to come out. If
it's all gonna come
it
out.
doesn't, if it doesn't come out with the baby, it'll come out with the placenta. Yeah.
Right. Yep. So yeah, I got cozied back into bed and was just so blissed out. And that was my birth story with her. Yeah.
You ever considered painting this oval portal vision?
Well, that's interesting that you would say that because I haven't, but I have considered painting and I intend to paint my red thread. So anyone who's listening who doesn't know, this analogy of the red thread can refer to our maternal line, this unbreakable ancestral line that, everyone was born to a woman for to the dawn of time for you to be here, and your mother's 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 mother. And so I've considered painting like my red thread with along it different totems of these women in my ancestral line, and
Cool idea.
I can name 7 generations of my maternal line. But I kind of struggled in formulating like what the background would be. There was pieces of the painting that were missing in my mind's eye. And so I'm so glad that you said that because it just sort of clicked for me. I was like, oh, that can be like that's the top or that's the
Totally.
end of it.
I see it as this like really big piece of canvas. And it's like black, but like rainbow black. Like just I can kind of, I feel like I can see it in my eye, in my
Oh,
mind's eye. And then
great.
this like epic shimmering pearl coming for you.
Oh, well,
You should
yeah.
paint it. That just sounds like a cool, however it comes out, that just sounds like a cool, it's just such a cool vision. And it was so present, you know? That's like a real visual gift for you.
Yeah, thank you. I intend to. And I had an awesome postpartum. Having studied innate traditions and RBK and having done postpartum care work before my birth, I knew how to set myself up and what kind of support that I wanted, and I stayed in bed. And I pretty much stayed in bed until my first 40 days and bonded and nursed and skin to skin and had an awesome meal train. And yeah, Sebastian was so supportive during that time. So I really have just such fond memories from my postpartum bubble. And I'm so grateful for the experience and who I've become because of it. And who have I become because of it? I embody now the profundity, the power, the expansiveness that comes with birthing in power on your terms in this way where we can become initiated into motherhood. And I want that so deeply for all of the mothers who are ready to choose it and the babies to be born in reverence, in honor, in peace, gently, and feel that it is my life's calling and the most holy devotional work for me in this life to support and resource mothers in whatever way that I can to calling that into being for thriving families, for resilient, thriving communities. So I think Margot was about maybe 6 or 7 months old when I went back to attending births and attended a lot of births in her first year and a half of life. And that came from starting up the village prenatal again. So I knew
Oh.
that I had, done that for myself when I was pregnant, and that was something that was so important to me to honor or to offer as a service to my community that if women want to have this experience of sovereign birth, that they know that, hey, we're here in the mountains and the forest and we gather and there's just nothing like having another woman to mirror that back to you. And I credit so much my relationship with Nina and other women in our village prenatal for just resourcing me to choose this. So, yep, I hosted a village prenatal in this home every month for the last year. And I think I haven't counted in a while, but around 30 and soon to be more babies have been born from women coming to that village prenatal. And so that has, then we had all these mamas coming with their like 4 or 6 week old babies back to the village prenatal because the community is so delicious. And I was like, okay, well, now we're talking about birth and postpartum, but this is supposed to be for pregnancy. So I started a mama baby postpartum connection circle as
Perfect.
well. So we were doing 2 circles a month, and it's just evolved so much into this magnificent community that I'm so honored and delighted to be a part of cultivating here in Santa Cruz. If you're local, if you're listening to this and you are in the Bay Area or in Santa Cruz and you want to be connected and come to a women's gathering. I'm not quite doing them every month anymore. A year of doing that was a lot for me. So, and also Celia, who is, and Lori are now hosting monthly village prenatals in the East Bay.
Nice.
So that'll be that kind of shifted over there. But there's still lots of gatherings happening, and planning a course, an in-person sovereign birth course as well. So there's always lots of exciting birth-related stuff happening in our community. And if you're listening to this and you want to be connected, please do reach out. And also, you know, for any women who are listening and this parts of my story were in resonance or alignment and you want to reach out and be in connection, this type of sisterhood that forms through walking the path of sovereign birth is so sacred to me and something that I cherish and I love. And so I'm always happy to be in relationship with sisters all over the world. My family and I travel a lot, and I've had the awesome privilege of meeting up with sisters that I've been connected through the free birth world all over the place. And I just love continuing to weave this web of global sisterhood so that we are all resourced to birth and power.
I'm thinking back to the beginning of your story, and I just think it's really cool that you through this, you know, painful, totally unsatisfactory dynamic with your own mother, which could have easily led you to be terrified of becoming a mom. A lot of women who would describe their relationship to their mother similarly, like how you did, tumultuous, don't think they want kids, or they're really scared of it. And I just think it's cool that you had willingness even so young to be inspired by it, you know, and to like fantasize and visualize a different way. It just says so much about your courage and your like capacity for evolution and vision. And yeah, I'm just so proud of you.
Thanks, Emily.
I really am.
I'm so grateful to you, and truly would not be where I am today if it wasn't for you and the work that you do. And so I just want to honor you, and I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for you. I wouldn't have known about free birth. You know, maybe I would have remembered somewhere else along the line,
yeah.
But just it's different to be so resourced with the way that you have dedicated your life to such a comprehensive breadth of offerings, you know, everything from online support to the podcast to in-person gatherings and studying with you and Sister Morningstar at the Midwife Within. And it's just absolutely who I am today is so deeply informed by your life's work. And I just bow to you in so much gratitude, and I honor you and see the way that you are playing such an essential role in spearheading this worldwide birth reclamation movement that I am honored to be part of, and I'm so deeply dedicated and devoted to for the rest of my stay here.
Yeah, it just feels so good to see women like you, especially because I've known you for years, to see what you're doing, you know, and that you like came under my wing in whatever way you did, and then went and did the thing, and you're walking the walk, and you're bringing the women in, and like 30 babies in your community in this short time. And I mean, this is it. This is how it happens. This is a sustainable model, you know, what we're doing and the passing of this and the ripple effect. And, you know, I'm thinking about so many women in the beginning of this like stuff will come to me and be like, no one came to my first circle, or like, they'll just be all confused about what they're doing, you know? And it's like, just stick with it. Just slow down, calm down. And something I like that you pointed out several times was you were so beautifully motivated for yourself to create a community. You know, it wasn't just this like professional move or this like hero thing. It was like you needed it, you wanted it. And so you know, paired up with another kindred spirit that also needed it and wanted it. And that's just so beautiful, because, you know, Yes, of course you attend, but the way in which you attend and the way you serve your community is such a inside out process of you being resourced enough to even have that to give, to share, you know? And I think it is a really different paradigm. I think you represent a very different paradigm of serving your community than this old way of martyrdom and, you know, being empty and exhausted and yeah, like the sacrifice, you know, this kind of old way of birth work and of motherhood. And I think, yeah, it's beautiful. It's just so beautiful to see. I'm so glad you and I get to be alive at the same time.
Yeah, that's so awesome. Thanks. Yeah, it's the coolest thing. And one of my favorite parts of hosting these circles is having women come and they're not quite sure what they're getting themselves into. And they're like firing their midwives at 38 weeks. Happened multiple times for women
For
who have come
sure.
to my circles.
I mean, is there anything more powerful than being around women who've already walked the walk? Like, that is the most fast-paced, you know, shifting I feel like we have, which is why the podcast, though a virtual resource, you know, has had such impact. But the podcast can't touch what an in-person circle can do, you know, and that you have, you know, just woman after woman now, like, oh, it's just such a gift. That's such a gift to the women coming into their babies, of course. It completely changes everything.
Truly. And for any women who are wanting to start women's circles or start Village Prenatals and might be anxious or nervous about it, I certainly was at the beginning, just remembering that it isn't even about the content of your words that you share, but about the frequency that you hold. And when women gather and we are in integrity and embodying this frequency of knowing the truth of birth, that it is this contagious awakening. We're mirroring back to other women. It's like, well, if you can do it, I can do it. And it's this lights on, you know, the frequency that we emanate are the codes of remembering. So it's just so powerful, the ripples and the spirals and the beauty and the joy that we can cultivate together when
It's
we.
true. Women are so cool. I mean, I realize it every time that MRF begins. Where I get in, you know, like all year I'm working on it and it's so much work and there's so many moving parts and it's just like a real labor of love. And then we arrive, you know, and I curate the whole schedule and like it's all just like I do all of it, you know, and then I get there and everyone arrives. And every year, and this happens in smaller ways in smaller gatherings too, but MRF is just like big marker for me because of course it happens every year. The women arrive and all this stuff I couldn't have predicted happens. That's beautiful. That's magical. You know, stuff that's outside of just my brain because hundreds of women have now gathered with this shared intention. And it's so, I can't even do it justice in articulating right now, but I'm so surprised. Every time groups of women get together, all the magic that just pops up, you know, the stuff that isn't scheduled or planned by me. Because, of course, when women gather, all this magic just happens. It's just how it goes. And a circle is like a microclimate of that. So, speaking to your ner the potential nervousness that anyone might have about a circle is like, well, it's not really about you. That's what's so cool. It's like, do the work to organize it and to get the women there and for them to know the address and text everyone a reminder. Like, do that part. And then light a candle, sing a song, and see what happens. And even if you just like ask everyone how they're doing, just let women gather in this way because all this magic, as women get comfortable, will just start to come because everyone has something, you know, to offer and will contribute as they relax. And MRF's like this mega, like on steroids version of that. That's just like, wow, like everyone's contributing just by being there and by being inherently magical, you know, everyone's contributing in this way that always just surprises me. Even like just how women will like add stuff to the altar, or like, you know, I'll just like walk in on women like rearranging a flower vase and just like it's just like their essence to contribute and to beautify and to love on each other, you know? It's so good. So a circle I just see as a like a very low stakes space to just allow that to be, you know?
Awesome. Yeah. Well, I'll just reiterate in closing that I really am devoted to being in service to women. And so if you live in a community where, like many women, where you don't have a circle of like-minded women around you and you want to walk this path, but you feel alone, that you don't have to be, and that I'm always happy to be connected and with women walking the sovereign path with the wild women. Thanks, Emily.
I hope you enjoyed the show today. You can support this podcast by donating to it through the link in the show notes below. And of course, leaving an awesome review on whatever platform you listen on. The more reviews, the more visibility the show gets. So let's spread the good word of Sovereign Birth. Don't forget, you can watch our podcast interviews on YouTube and see the women as they tell their birth and power stories. And you'll also find our viral free birth collection of epic raw birth videos on our YouTube. Make sure you're subscribed to our channel. We've always got a lot going on at Free Birth Society, and you can find out all about it at freebirthsociety.com, at Free Birth Society on Instagram, and opt in to my newsletter below. We offer courses on free birth, authentic midwifery, the blood mysteries, as well as one-on-one coaching, in-person retreats, and of course, our annual women's gathering, the Matriarch Rising Festival. Our exclusive, private, vetted membership, the Lighthouse, is definitely something to check out if you're looking for a community of wise sisters to get guidance from and to meet in real life. Together we rise, sisters. We must speak our stories, fully claim our lives, and support one another. This is the living revolution, and I am so grateful to be in it with all of you. I'll leave you with our gorgeous Free Birth Society theme song, Wild Woman by Aruba Red.
I honor you for the wisdom you held, the ancient traditions of plant medicine and womb magic. I feel the spirit of the ancestors as I place my hands upon my belly. This sacred portal will be honored. Eons upon light beams of survival, withstanding the eradication of our power by design. I will not allow the separation of our young to be forced upon me. My sisters will no longer birth in captivity. The picket line redefined from burning our wild women to paralyzing us and drugging our babes. Strapped down in a clinical white bed, drying up the milk from our breasts, keep your needles. My family will never again be doomed to chase those dragons or your poison. We reject your fear. We choose love. Everything with intention, death, ascension. I will fly and bring her back from the stars.